The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. Sit back and relax. If you're having your morning breakfast, that's a wonderful thing. If you're out tooling around, that's great. Keep your hands on the wheel and pay attention to where you're going and give us an ear. In this half hour of the show, we're going to do something I have wanted to do for 20 years on air. And that was talk about Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. And Maggid Press just came out with a book. He was one of the leading Jewish philosophers of the 20th century. The book is called Confrontation and Other Essays. It's a series of essays that he presented. And we're going to be talking with Detroit's own Professor Kenneth Chelt, who is a student of the Rav, as he is referred to. And I'm really excited about this. We have lots of wonderful Jewish music for you, some new stuff, some really new stuff. The portion of the week is Teruma, can be found in the book of Exodus 26 and following, an awesome Hasidic story at the end of the show. You'll stay all the way to the end, last minute. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Three Arab terrorists armed with submachine guns opened fire at police in Jerusalem, striking two female officers. Hadar Cohen, age 19, later died of her wounds. She was one of the two officers. Police killed the three terrorists on the spot. The first Palestinian Authority embassy in the Western Hemisphere was opened this week in Brazil. The event was attended by left-wing Brazilian government officials, representatives of Arab countries, and members of the local Arab community. Two 13-year-old Arab girls stabbed a security guard near the Ramleh Central bus station. The girls pulled out kitchen knives of a school backpack and began stabbing the guard when he asked them for identification. He was taken to a nearby hospital with stab wounds in his hand and leg. The girls were arrested. And finally, something at home, unfortunately, swastikas were painted on the front of a Jewish-owned business in Seattle, Washington. It was the second incident in the last 6 months that Sleepers, I'm not even sure what kind of store that is, Sleepers in Seattle was vandalized in such a manner. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in a growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Dr. Kenneth Chelt, who is a professor at Wayne State University. We're talking today about Rabbi Yosef B. Soloveitchik, one of the foremost philosophers of the Jewish philosophers of the 20th century. Maggid Press just came out with a book of his essays. How are you today, Dr. Chelt?
I'm fine.
Good to hear. Thank you so much for taking time. I'm actually looking very much forward to this. Me, as not being a student of the Rav, as he was referred, am quite interested to talk philosophy over here. So, first of all, you were familiar with Rabbi Soloveitchik?
I studied with him for several years, and my family had an even longer relationship with Rav Soloveitchik. my father was hired to teach Russ Salvechik's children, so they have a long relationship in my family.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm assuming that you, so that was in Boston, then I would assume, which is where the rest was. So
I studied with Russ Salvechik at Yeshiva University.
And you were there. Did you attend his synagogue?
When I lived in Boston during my PhD, I davened, yes, in Maimonides.
Okay, so you were there. So you probably
and I also taught there for a year.
Oh, okay. So you probably heard him lecture several times then, or many times.
Yeah, many times.
Many times. Okay. So I've read through the book. This is actually the first book of the Rabbi Soloveitchik's writings that I've come across, that I read. And I have my ideas on what my thing would be. But I'd like to see, is it possible, could you put it into, say, like, in a very succinct point, what was Rabbi Soloveitchik trying to convey? What was his general message?
General message. Okay, so he placed a primacy on an intellectual approach to Judaism in terms of understanding God, which then became an emotional experience. I mean, I think most people would say, when do I speak to God? I speak to God when I pray. Rav Soloveitchik often said that he felt God's presence tapping him on the shoulder when he studied. So he felt closer to God on an intimate level, intellectually and emotionally, than one would traditionally align with prayer. And the other major message is that we there's a famous statement that religion is an opiate for the masses, and Soloveitchik believed that being a religious man meant dealing with complexity. It didn't solve all intellectual challenges, that it really made life more complex and not simpler to be a religious person. When you look at the world and you're religious, you are troubled by the fact that evil exists. If you were not a religious person, it wouldn't bother you, per se. So religion is complex and life is complex, and an intellectual approach is the way he related to God. I mean, he obviously prayer was an important element of his life, but he would often say that God was in the room when he was studying and he could feel his presence.
Okay.
That help a little?
Oh, a lot. Tons. Like I say, I'm here to learn too, just as much. So the author, it doesn't say anything about who put these together, which I was very disappointed with, Magid, and why these were chosen. I'm sure that there's here a list in this book. There are five or so essays, and I'm sure Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote a lot more than just these five essays. And I can't ask you, well, why did you choose these five? But there seems to be a common theme, and I'm wondering, is this a common thing in all of his lessons, that there's, I mean, the first, the one that they're really emphasizing is the word confrontation. We're affected by a dichotomy in life. We are good, we are surrounded by evil. We have good impulses, which is our nature, and there's a leaning to things away from good. Is this a reoccurring theme in Rabbi Soloveitchik's writings, Professor Gels?
I don't know that he spends that much time on the issue of evil as what we're surrounded by. I would say he's more interested in secular rather than evil as the antidote, rather than evil per se, a secular world that sees the world only in secular values, like aesthetics. He was not a big fan of aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not a big fan of subjectivity. He believed that there was an objectivity in terms of how to look at the world through objective lenses. And his view of the world in his essay on Halachic Man is that the Halachic Man, everywhere he looks, he sees God's presence, but the way he sees God's presence is through the fact that God has given him a halachic lens, that he can look at any aspect of life and see God has given us laws to bring kedusha or holiness into life, and the mechanism for seeing that is halacha. So when I look at fruits and vegetables, I can think about their their content and what laws apply to them, and God has now given me a lens that says I can look at anything and see there's a holiness that God is enabling me to interpret it. And that's in contrast to the secular view that would look at an apple, is it a pretty apple, or aesthetic view of life. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more about secular versus holy than it is about evil versus good.
I want to talk about that soon. In the first essay, which is entitled Community, so he raises that people are a living dichotomy. Jews especially are communal-minded. Jews have a tendency, there's such a thing called Jewish neighborhoods. When something happens to a family, they have a birth, a sickness, a death, so the community steps forward and provides meals for people. We are enjoined to pray communally in the synagogues, and people, therefore, because of the nature of the Sabbath, that we walk and don't ride, so there's a cluster around these Jewish centers. But so we have this need for community, and indeed, people have a need to relate to other people. But on the other hand, Just to paraphrase it myself, sometimes we just want to be left alone with our own thoughts, and we just want to say, no, I don't want to be involved with community. I'd rather stay away. And he deals with that. Could you comment on that, please, Professor Chelst?
Yeah, so that's that's symptomatic of one of the core elements of the Rav's philosophy, is that the world is not linear, in the sense that sometimes I feel I need to be alone, and other times I feel I need to be community. So it's not a one-dimensional world, and that there's a tension. That's what he calls the word confrontation. There's a tension in me that at times I want to be part of a community, and that's the norm. That don't make the mistake that tension ever disappears. About community, he believes, is important for multiple reasons. One of them is the fundamental belief that Judaism and God believes in building what he calls the chesed community, a community of acts of chesed, and that's one of the core elements of Judaism. The famous statement that he bragged about is that his grandfather, who was a brilliant intellectual, on his tombstone wanted some statement about his being a man of chesed and how he cared for the poor, that should be on his tombstone. Mm-hmm. And that his grandfather would open up the door. It's hard for us to imagine this, but he would find orphans left on his doorstep. Wow. To take care of them. So he believed in community, but then he has a whole article called Lonely Man of Faith. I mean, it's the contrast of, as we've all experienced, and this goes back thousands of years, philosophers have said that you can be in a crowd and still feel more alone than ever when you're in a crowded room. And that tension is the essence, one of the elements of Rav Soloveitchik, because he constantly talks about a tension, not a tension, but tension in life, that you go back and forth between different emotional experiences and how you view the world, and they're both legitimate, and it depends upon the time and the place, what you need more. Obviously, when you stand in prayer before God, you're standing there alone, but you're praying in a synagogue with a community that has more of a claim on God's attention than I as an individual have as a claim to God's attention.
This is fascinating. So, absolutely. You mentioned before about secularism. Just because I don't know, so I'm led of the opinion that Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik was probably one of the first religious Jewish leaders who really pushed for secularism. And he was involved with Yeshiva University for 6 decades, I think, where the idea was that we have Jewish learning and we are also learning different various business skills. Whereas in other yeshivas and other philosophies in Judaism, the secular world was shunned. There's been all kinds of stories on the East Coast of yeshivas that are teaching inadequate secular studies, and it's under this movement is under the microscope. So could you talk about this idea of balancing secularism, which means going out of the community, really, and
right.
and the holiness, which means staying in the community.
Okay, so I mean, his classic essay, basically, when he talks about Adam Harishon, Adam, he talks about first obligation is to multiply and conquer the world. Rav Soloveitchik believed that the Jew had two responsibilities. Every Jew has two responsibilities. He has a responsibility to be part of the community, to be human, and that that was not replaced by the fact that he became part of a covenant, a unique covenantal community that required him to be a Jew. He has both responsibilities, to be part of it. And the most popular verse or phrase that he recited often is a verse for Abraham, and the phrase is Ger v'toshav anochi, that Avram described himself as both as a stranger in his community and as a citizen of the community. And Rav Soloveitchik believed that the ideal was to be both, that you had to be an equal partner in the community, in the progress of mankind and the progress of science, and a player in the religious community. Now, whether every individual is capable of doing both or whether we as a group do both, but he believes those are two dimensions of the Jew, and they were, I wouldn't say equally important, but they were both of prime importance. Mm-hmm. And therefore, secular knowledge was absolutely critical to be engaged in, and that secular knowledge included not just sciences and the maths. Certainly, his son-in-law is famous for literature. Reverend Lichtenstein was an expert in that, and his other son-in-law was a historian. That was Rabbi Twersky. So science was, from his perspective, the most important part, but obviously his son-in-laws had other dimensions of secular knowledge that were integrated into their world perspective.
There are major conflicts between science, secularism, and Judaism and holiness. Like, for example, the age of the universe, for example. Did he address those conflicts?
Okay, so he never felt there were any conflicts, and he never actually bothered to talk about them. I mean, that was really his response. He didn't see any, and he never got bogged down into that specific detail, so... It really wasn't a topic that I think he ever talked about. In reading his stuff, you could see how he interpreted some of the stuff allegorically about worlds being created and destroyed, but he never explicitly wrote something about the age of the universe, to the best of my knowledge. It was just something he felt didn't bother him.
Mm-hmm. That's a smart way of doing it.
And he didn't see any substantial conflict between science and religion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I'm a student of Tanya. Tanya is what got me involved with Judaism. When I learned Tanya, I have the impression that the Alter Rebbe, that the Tanya is the basic book in Hasidic thought, dealing with overcoming conflict and how the best that we can possibly be. In learning the material, the way it was presented to me is that the Alter Rebbe was approaching it from the top down. He didn't have to go through all that he was writing there and was trying to provide the tools and guide that people should be able to deal with whatever comes to them in life. When I was reading these essays, I was thinking maybe Rabbi Soloveitchik was talking as a person who is living through these conflicts. What would you say, Dr. Gelst?
Okay, when you say living through conflict, I'm not sure.
He was living through this idea of having to deal with secularism versus holy, community versus self, aesthetic versus going
okay,
beyond.
Okay, so when I use, I mean, I think one of the things you have to be careful about the word, when I use the word secularism, I was using it as, in a sense, anti-holy, not the neutral part of secular knowledge. So I would say the Rav viewed all knowledge as potentially holy. I mean, so when I say secularism, it means people don't see the world as holy. He constantly lived a tension that the world was in conflict, and I don't know that I would say he struggled, but he didn't. He was not. He generally didn't demonstrate. He was not. He didn't wasn't a strong fan of an emotional approach to religion, and sort of like this year, sort of like aspiring to reach some type of form of holiness. Everything he did was grounded in halacha. That's why he wrote the essay, The Halachic Man, that it was grounded in, I wouldn't say practicality, because he studied halacha that was not practical, but it was very much an intellectual, creative process in how he looked at the world, but there was a tension. I mean, and he repeatedly says that religion does not provide all the answers. If anything, religion forces you to ask more questions than you have answers to. Mm-hmm. And that would then mean he lived a life with conflicting conflicts that he had to deal with. And obviously, I wouldn't say he grew of age, but it was in his 30s and 40s when the Holocaust occurred, and he was there for the birth of the State of Israel. So, I mean, obviously he lived in the prime of when there were major conflicts in the world that would have to force you to ask questions, and then he lived with those questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're segueing me, Dr. Kenneth Chills, into my next question. Is Rabbi Soloveitchik and Zionism, there were various movements going back from the time that Theodore Herzl stood up and did the First World Congress, and it ran the full gamut and spectrum from the very reform movement to the very orthodox in opposition to the establishment of a state in what we call today Israel. The Rav was very, very pro-Israel. And if you could please, if maybe you could enlighten us as to the nature, what was his belief in putting so much behind in this Jewish state?
Okay, so he certainly believed that this was a unique moment in Jewish history, in the sense that God is knocking on a door and letting us know that it's a new period in time. And he believed he had to break away from his family, and that's one of the interesting things, at least my belief, is that he really liked the fact that his name was Joseph, his personal name, because he viewed himself like Joseph in Egypt, that he was different than his brothers, who were generally, the Soloveitchik family and all of his cousins were generally anti-Zionistic. And he broke away and he thought that they were wrong in terms of the way the world was going and that the Jewish world was going. So he was a very strong believer in a state. And he strongly believed it offered new opportunities in terms of religious observance. He was not a big fan of linking politics and religion in the State of Israel. He was very strongly opposed to that. He believed that the generals should make the decisions about security issues, but there was plenty of new opportunities for religion. And obviously he inspired, his son-in-law helped bring Alon Shrut to a higher level. But he was a believer that this was a new time and a new place that offered new opportunities for religious experience. And he was extremely supportive, and some of his most famous students eventually set up, Rabbi Riskin, and of course his son-in-law, Rabbi Lichtenstein, set up and tried to make their contributions. And unfortunately, most recently, his grandson paid with his life when he was hacked to death last year, Rabbi Twersky. So he was passionate about it. In terms of that, this is God knocking on our door.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have time for one last question. I'm fascinated by this. I could talk about this, probably fill up the whole entire show. There's one very, very short essay. I wouldn't even call it an essay. It's sort of like a postscript, which is in this book, about debating Judaism's authenticity. And the Rabbi Soloveitchik was very much against entering into interreligional dialogue. What was he worried about?
Okay, so I guess there are two issues. One is philosophically he didn't believe in it. He saw there was no reason and no value in exploring philosophical issues. And he was concerned, and again, remember, most of what he's writing is in the 50s and 60s, was that it would be always a dialogue between unequals, that you'd have, he often calls them the larger faith community, Christianity, and the smaller faith community, Judaism, and he always felt that it would be an imbalance and that Judaism would always be asking them for favors to say, look, don't look at us as negatively as you used to do. Maybe you'll view us in a better light in the future. So he felt there was an unequal dialogue, and that we would always be viewed as second-class citizens, and that would affect our own self-image of who we are, that we're the smaller community, they're the bigger community, and bigger means better or more correct. So it was that imbalance in discussion, I think, that bothered him the most. And then also philosophically, he felt that people have different ways and different life experience on how they approach God, and there was, although there could be practical issues like, you know, how we treat the poor and how we do social services and how we deal with other problems, and it could be driven by our religious faith, but the discussion about faith itself had no reason to be discussed, and it would always be an unequal debate. And we'd be asking for them to do us favors and to stop saying bad things about us or something like that.
Wow. Okay. Very good. That, unfortunately, we are out of time for this segment. Our guest today has been Dr. Kenneth Chelsea. He's a professor at Wayne State University here in Detroit. We were discussing the philosophy of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik because Magid Press just came out with a book of essays, Confrontation and Other Essays. And Dr. Chelsea, I want to thank you so much for taking your time and sharing your knowledge with us.
Well, thank you. I had to now spend the last 8 hours rereading his philosophy. Ready for this interview.
I suppose that's a very good thing then. Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park is something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes.
Hey.
Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Stop paying more than your fair share of property tax now. I'm Stephen Poulter, attorney at law and president of Express Property Tax Appeals. Right now, your commercial property tax assessments are in the mail. Like many commercial property owners, you're probably paying unnecessary and exorbitant property taxes, potentially costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars every year. Express Property Tax Appeals can help. I recently reduced one of my clients' property tax values by $2 million, realizing $250,000 in real tax dollar savings. I can do the same for you. If you're a commercial property owner, manager, or broker, and are tired of paying more than your fair share of property tax, call Express Property Tax Appeals now at 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. That's 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. You have nothing to lose except your looming property tax burden. I'm Stephen Poulter with Express Property Tax Appeals, and I look forward to saving you money on your property taxes.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. That was fascinating. Riveting. I'm like my kids would say, I'm all gliggly. That's the Finman terminology for it. We got to move on. Life moves on, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately. This is a new song. This is Ellie Begun, who I'm assuming is a son of Yerachmiel Begun, who is one of the big producers of Jewish music in America. The song is called We Must Go, which kind of toes in, like, we got to get to Israel. Let's hear it.
Life takes us
my core, and it seems like a trial that we can't overcome. But we must go on finding our way through the darkness, not alone. Hashem helps us carry on, and we must stay strong. Even when all hope has left us after night, comes the early rays of dawn. Unimaginable years, a nation's river of tears, yet we come together, standing by His name.
Standing by His name.
Dangers we all know.
Dangers we all know.
Coming from friend,
coming from friend.
Oh, but it burns forever, our eternal flame.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Shel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. That was pleasant. I like that. That was good. This is another new song. This one actually is hours old, believe it or not. This is Shlomo Daskal. I haven't heard from him in a long time. He's probably a grandfather by now. I remember playing Shlomo Daskal stuff 20 years ago. I think then he was maybe a teenager. So this song is called Yadaiti, which means I know.
Yodati, yodati, yodati. Ki hineni beyonchu, beyonchu, beyonchu levad. Ki hineni beyonchu, beyonchu, beyonchu levad. Kach oimer, beyad,
ביד היוצא ריבוי נו אילומם יודעתי 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 כי הנה אני ביולכו 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 לבד כי הנה אני ביולכו 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 לבד כך הוא ימר Nay ving am misalay bey I see this sabirois be sabava pilo the whole yesh we say vel ya meduli mini li yoshi ay ni vilis moich nafshi mi bala na vada mi bala na ischu be yisrasko nay 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 nesru bi yeshi
Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. We have time for one more. Got dipped into the archives. This is L'cha Dodi, which is taken from the Friday Night Liturgy. And this is the one and only Shlomo Carlebach.
Shlomo Karlbach, Lecha Deidi. We've got a this you'll send you the Jewish Hour, if you hadn't remembered since the last time I said it. Public service announcement, the Holocaust Memorial Center, in partnership with the Jewish Ensemble Theater, also known as JET, are presenting three play readings. This is what they do. Each year, the Jewish Ensemble Theater receives hundreds of new scripts to consider for production. The first step is taking a script from the page to the stage is to read it at an engaged audience. So the playwright and the director will be present at these readings of read by professionals. Today at 2 o'clock at the JET Theater, this is in the JCC in West Bloomfield, there's a play called The Groyser, which means the big one, by James Harmon Brown. Next Sunday at 2 p.m., February the 14th, is a play called Struck by Sandy Rustin. And the following Sunday at 2 p.m. on February 21st is a play called Survivors by Jeff Stolzer. Tickets are available 788-2900 or JET Theater, theater spelled like the English way, .org. And actually it says all readings will be performed at the Holocaust Memorial Center on Orchard Lake between 12 and 13 Mile Road. Glad I saw that little print. I was going to send you off to the JCC, but it's not there. Is your organization having something that you'd like to have publicized here? Absolutely free of charge. It's a public service announcement. That's one of the things that we do. We serve the public. So send it off to me, to rabbifinman.com, and we'll put it on the air for you. And we love doing that kind of thing. This week is the portion of Teruma. After the Jewish people received the Torah on Sinai, unfortunately, there was a mishap. The mishap is called the golden calf, which doesn't happen for another 2 weeks because there is no chronology in the Bible. As a recourse for the Jewish people, because God is all-merciful, there's still a way for having a communion, a way of relating directly to God. And so the Jewish people were enjoined to build a sanctuary, as it says right at the beginning of the portion, so that I can live with you or in you or among you. That's God talking. Because God still wants to be part, even though they did something so terrible as making a golden calf. The focal point of the sanctuary And then the ensuing sanctuaries, the sanctuary traveled with them, the portable one traveled with them in the desert for 40 years. It was then erected at Gilgal for 14 years during the time of Joshua during the conquest of Israel. It then moved to a permanent, more permanent structure. It was made out of stone in Shiloh, also known as Shiloh. It was knocked down by the Philistines and was temporarily rebuilt for in a period of grand total of 69 years in Givon and Nov. And then Solomon built the temple, which lasted for 410 years on the Temple Mount. That was destroyed by the Babylonians. 70 years later, it was rebuilt by Ezra and augmented 100 and something years later by Herod, and lasted for a grand total of 420 years when it was knocked down by Titus the Roman. And all that remains is the retaining wall, which we refer to as the Western Wall, which actually goes around the whole entire Temple Mount. The spot still remains holy. But the focal point of all of those structures was the Holy of Holies, as it's called. And in fact, in the jargon, when something is sort of like really totally off limits, so they said, what, it's the Holy of Holies? Or they say, oh, no, this is Holy of Holies. You can't go, because the only one who was allowed in the Holy of Holies was the high priest on Yom Kippur, on the Day of Atonement. In the Holy of Holies, up until the destruction of the first temple, from the time of Moses till the destruction of the first temple, which is about 800 years or so, the focal point was the Holy Ark, which contained the tablets of the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments that Moses brought down from Sinai when he came down the third time. First time he went up there to get the first tablets, he came down, he got broken. Second time he went up to get the Jewish people forgiven. Third time he came down with the second tablets, which were placed in the Ark. The interesting thing about the Ark is that it was measurable to itself, but it was not measurable to its surroundings. It had a specific dimension, 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5 cubits, with a cubit being the distance from the point of your elbow to the point of your middle finger on the average-sized person. But if you measured a room, for example, or the room, which the Holy of Holies was 10 by 10 cubits, if you measured from one end of the ark to the other to the wall, and then measured from the other end of the ark to the other wall, it measured, it's actually 20 by 20, excuse me, it measured 20, which just doesn't fit because it should have measured 22 and a half. So it was not measurable because how was it, what was the success of the Holy of Holies was its nullified sense to God. We also, now we don't have a structure, but God still says, V'shechanti b'seicham, to dwell in you. Where is our Holy of Holies? Is our heart. When we void ourselves of the ego and our own importance and turn our importance over to the Almighty, then we fit in the groove. And then, I guess, hopefully, we get to live happily ever after. Speaking of which, we've got to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? The easiest, fastest way is to go to RabbiFinman.com. There you'll find archived editions of the show. You'll find ways to contact me. You'll find other ways in which I communicate the ideals and senses of Judaism. You'll also find the very, very, very important donation page. It's February. Guess what? I'm still working on January. You'll see, we are still working on January. If you're listening to the show, you're a part of the show because the show is listener-supported by listeners such as yourself. we need you. Go to the computer, rabbifinman.com, make a donation. If you have a PayPal account, it takes 30 seconds, and you can do it such that you can set it up that it'll happen every single month. You don't even have to think about it, and it'll just happen because you will now be ensuring that the Jewish Hour next month is our 20th anniversary online, on the air, excuse me. If you want to keep it up, if you like listening, do it today. We have to do a quick book review, and that being of the latest volume of the Koren Talmud, which is done by Rabbi Steinsaltz. You should live long and be healthy. This is Ketubos Volume 2, Ketubot, as they would like to say, and Volume 2, which deals with the monetary issues involved in getting married and what are the rights and responsibilities. It is some of the hardest Talmud that's in the Talmud. And the Koren Talmud comes through again and absolutely does a wonderful job. Every page is totally and completely elucidated in a manner which is very, very easy to understand. I recommend that if you're interested in the subject, and just like the idea of studying Talmud, this is volume 22, I believe, and I don't have it in front of me, but I just know. And there's a total of 43, so they're about halfway there. So I would recommend go to Koren Pub, K-O-R-E-N-P-U-B, and browse and take a look yourself. The story for today involves the Baal Shem Tov. Normally the Baal Shem Tov on Shabbos afternoon would have Shalashut as the third meal, and he would extend it very late so as to extend the holiness of the Sabbath into the week. It happened one day, one Shabbos, that as soon as the Shabbos was, it was the earliest it was possible to end the Sabbath, he was over and he was in his carriage. And he took a couple of students with him, and they traveled from the city of Mezhebuzh, which is located many, many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms, to the city of Brody, which is also many, many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. And he pulled up to a synagogue, and they were having a meeting. What was the meeting about? This new group, which was called The Group, which the Baal Shem Tov was headed, and the meeting was to discuss the idea of excommunicating any member of the group, especially its leader, the Baal Shem Tov. So the Baal Shem Tov came, the door was locked, there was a guard outside saying, no one can enter unless you have an invitation. This is private only. So the Baal Shem Tov told the guard, go tell them that they, the 250 people, plus the Arugas HaBoisim, whose name is Moshe Oster, are just like Korach. And if you don't let me in, what's going to happen to them is what happened to Korach. He got swallowed up by the earth. This was very perplexing. They let him in. And he spoke very eloquently, such that even the Arugas HaBoisim himself, who was the leader of this movement against him, handed him a copy of his new book, which was a commentary on Shir HaShirim. And he flipped through it, and in like 10 seconds said, it's very well written. Everything here is true. So he said, you couldn't have read it that fast. He said, you have commented on every verse in Shir HaShirim, in the Song of Songs of Solomon, except for the title verse, which is Arugas HaBoisim, with that one verse in chapter 7. So he said, I did write it. So he said, show me. He opened it up, and somehow there had been some kind of a printing error, and it was missing. So the idea of excommunicating the Baal Shem Tov and the group was dropped. That's going to do it for us. We're going to hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope to see you again next week. Take care.